she started walking, gesturing me to follow. "There's something I'd like to show you. We can't see it from here, but if you come with me to the top of a hill, we will be able to see one of the most beautiful sunsets one will ever view." We both rode on my bike to the base of a steep hill. Rama indicated I should stop. We left the bike there and started climbing. The higher we climbed, the more I complained. My heart was pounding rapidly, my breath was short. This altitude was tiring me quickly. She wasn't even winded. Obviously, she was in much better shape than I. I had to stop and rest several times. Finally, she took me by the arm and helped me climb the rest of the way. While she held my arm and we climbed the hill, she continued talking to me. I was happy to just listen. "This is another reason why you'll find us here," she said. "This type of atmosphere, this thin air, is right for us. Just as in our own world. This is the type of air we breathe normally. And being isolated gives us lots of room to move about unmolested dear skies, not too much air traffic, no radar. This is our type of area. The native Peruvians are always kind to us. They think we are, as you've said before, part of the Peace Corps. They seldom, if ever, bother us. And we don't bother them. They help us, we help them. This is the one place where we can be ourselves without worrying about the horrible world in which you live out there. Understand?" "Yes," I said, panting, "but I can't make it to the top. It's too steep." "Yes, you can," she said firmly, putting even more pressure on my arm. She still showed no signs of tiring. Then, quite suddenly, I started feeling new energy and strength. I was amazed. At this altitude, the slightest amount of exercise for even a few minutes would be extremely tiring for anyone not used to the atmospheric conditions. When we finally made it to the top, still breathless, I wondered how I had done it. Rama seemed unaffected. She pointed to some higher mountains in the distance, about 40 or 50 miles. The icy grandeur of those sweeping forms was even more breathtaking than the climb up the hill had been. "That's it, Charles," she said. "Our temporary home on this green water planet. Those white mountains out there?" I said, incredulous. "Is that where you people live?"
"Yes, Chucho. For the time being. But all I can see is massive chunks of ice. We live inside." I said the first thing that came to mind.
"How do you get in and out?"
"We have our ways. Our entrances and exits. I don't think an earthly could get in there."
"I see what you mean when you say inaccessible. Secret entrances and exits, right?"
"Right. How often do you get out?"
"You know, mingle with civilization.
Whenever we want to. From this point we are able to circle the earth in a matter of minutes. In a vimana."
"What's a vimana?"
"The objects you saw yesterday," she said simply.
"I didn't get that good a look at them," I said. "And I think I went into shock. Remember, it was the first time in my life I've ever seen anything like that. I was facing the unknown." Again, I found myself feeling agitated by her story. "This whole thing is getting harder and harder to believe. You've got to come up with a lot more proof if you want to convince me that what you're saying isn't bullshit.
Show me. Prove it to me."
"I'll do no such thing."
"Why not?
Is this all a big joke?"
"Listen, Charles, I'll give you more than enough a proof. But I will not show you anything. That'd be much too easy."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Like most Earth people, you don't believe anything unless you see. You want to see flying saucers, get inside them, take a ride, and be convinced. That kind of proof I will not give you. Neither will my friends. For once in your life, you will have to open your mind a little bit. What you're telling me is one of the most incredible things I've ever heard. And you expect me to blindly accept whatever you tell me?"
"Yes. And for a good reason. You see, the main purpose of our mission to this world of yours is not to prove the existence of UFOs. In order to talk to me, or to any of my friends,
as extraterrestrials, you must begin with the premise that space travel is not unreasonable, and that there is absolutely nothing to be frightened of. If you will take the time to do some research, and if you have the intelligence I believe you have, you'll understand everything. You can draw your own conclusions. But very soon you will be able to grasp the idea that UFOs have always existed and that we are not alone in the universe. Literally millions of people on your planet have seen some sort of UFO at one time or another. You will be Rama's little experiment. Based mainly on faith, you will come to accept what I am telling you just by compiling your own evidence. And by making intelligent observations on what we make available to you. Her self-assured confidence really got on my nerves. What do you mean your little experiment? You think I'm a guinea pig or something? Now, Charles, she said, again reading me like a book, hold your horses. Don't get so excited. All I'm saying is that if you are as sharp as you claim to be, it will be a very simple task for you to understand this whole thing. I'll tell you everything you want to know. But if that is to be, you'll have to relax. Right now you're very confused. And extremely doubtful. You'll have to be in a much more receptive mood for me to get through to you. Yeah, you're right. This altitude has given me a massive headache. Let's just sit down here for a little while, Charles, and admire the sunset. This is the one time of day we give our spirits a necessary electrical charge of solar energy. By watching the sunset, the sun is a source of inspiration and energy. You charge the batteries of your spirit by meditation. And at this time of day we spiritually travel into the cosmos. Now you're really sounding like a guru. I sat down, got more comfortable and started to enjoy the incredible view. Rama stood behind me, massaging the back of my neck. Then she placed the tips of her fingers on both sides of my head, pressing gently. In no more than 20 seconds, all my aches and pains were gone. I was so grateful and happy, I started to ask how she had done it. But before I could speak, she silently motioned me to be still, to just enjoy the spectacular scene surrounding us. We watched in silence as the sun disappeared. It started getting colder. I asked Rama, only half jokingly, if she'd give me a lift back to Huakeo in a Vimana. She saw no humor in my request. Regretfully, I realized that if I hadn't made fun of her and the things she'd been telling me, there would have been a better chance for that. I'd better go now, I said. My friends will be worried about me. And it's getting very cold down here. I'd like you to come back tomorrow, she said. And we'll continue your education. Okay. I'll spend a couple more hours with you. But tomorrow I have to leave early. I have a long drive back to Lima and these mountain roads are rough driving. Fine, Charles. I'll be waiting for you at the same time. And do me a small favor, will you? That depends. Don't tell anybody about this. Not yet. Let's just wait a while. Then you can tell it to the world. What could I tell anybody? You know no one would ever believe me. We'll talk about that tomorrow. The important thing is that I see you are taking it well. And, in spite of what you are saying, you are starting to believe me. I'd like you to be conscious. No mental or physical harm will come to you. You'll revise a good deal of your thinking, in fact, and physically feel better than you've ever felt before. Revise? Yes. All those negative things you've been doing since childhood must be readjusted. Then you'll learn even more. I promise you the experience of your life. Will I get to meet your friends? I guess so. Okay, then. I'll be back tomorrow. I won't have the motorcycle, just look for an orange Volkswagen. Don't worry, Charles. I'll know exactly when you arrive. Two, I didn't doubt it for a moment. Let's go, I said. You go ahead. I'll stay here. Don't bother waiting for me to come down, because I won't. I started to argue, but she made it sound like a command. Dutifully I started to go back down, looking back and shouting, if you say so, my dear friend from the stars. Riding back to Huakeo on the bike, Many thoughts went through my mind. I consider myself to be a serious person. It was difficult for me to believe I had been actually talking to an extraterrestrial. I'd known many girls in my life, from all corners of the world. And I'd met a lot of nuts, people who would say or do the craziest things to get attention. But she was the most unusual person I'd ever met. She couldn't be for real. Or was she? I knew I couldn't tell these things to anybody, much less the world. Confused, I continued driving through the mountains until I reached an open valley. I could clearly see the peaks that Rama had shown me just before sunset. By now, the last specks of light were disappearing behind the tip of the highest peak. The white ice and snow had turned a bright pink. It was not possible. How could it be that in June of 1974 of our 20th century, with all of our modern technology, that a terrestrial UFO base could have gone unnoticed? I drove all the way back to Huancayo and went straight to Richard's apartment. He and the girls had spent the day at the fair and seemed to be exhausted. We all decided to go out for a quick dinner and, since we were all beat, we came back to the room and went right to sleep. Chapter 4. Science Fiction or Science Fact? On Monday morning I awoke and found Richard still sleeping and the girls gone. He opened his eyes when he heard me moving about and got up. We both looked like we'd spent a rougher night than we actually had. Richard went into the kitchen to make some coffee, while I shaved and started putting my things together. As I dressed, I thought about Rama and the things she had told me. When I was finished, I wandered into the kitchen. As Richard and I sat down, drinking our coffee, I decided to probe him a little about flying saucers in the area. "Say, Richard, Saturday night when we were talking about flying saucers, you seemed to know something about them," I said, as casually as possible. "Lots of people around here claim to have seen them at various times, in various places," he said. "Good, reliable people?" "Well, yes, there was one fellow, by the name of Herrera or something, I don't remember the exact story, but it was all over town, even in the news recently. I'm not sure if he saw the UFOs or communicated with some alien beings from outer space. I don't really follow those things, but supposedly it did happen. You know how difficult it is to believe these things." "Yes, I know what you mean," I agreed. "Then there was another story about this mining engineer not too far from this area. What was that all about, Richard? Do you recall any of the details?" "Yes. On the way here, just a little ways past Tiglio, there's a place called Mirococca. An engineer was doing some field work with an assistant and a UFO supposedly carried down and suspended about 20 feet in the air, about 150 feet away from them. The assistant ran towards it. When he was under it, the object just took off and disappeared, quick as a flash, into the skies. Of all the UFO accounts I've heard, this one I tend to believe the most because the report was made by the engineer. He works for a company I'm familiar with, Cerro de Pasco. And I know that in order to work for that company one has to be tops in every way. They scrutinize their employees thoroughly. Is that the Cerro Corporation headquartered on Park Avenue in New York?"
"That's the one."
"What else do you know about that incident?"
"Well, one of the workers I know personally told me he was there when this engineer made a drawing of the UFO. The description was supposedly pretty accurate, 30 feet or better in diameter and 8 to 10 feet thick. Where could I find these guys if I wanted to talk to them?"
"I couldn't tell you. As of the first of this year, Cerro de Pasco is no longer in Peru, you know."
"Yes, I know. Why? What makes it so important?"
"I'm curious, Richard.
Very, very curious."
"Well, I'd like to help you," Richard said. "But that's about all I know, my boy."
"You've already helped me, my friend, more than you realize," I said.
Richard looked at me for a moment, then said, "By the way, Chicho, you never did tell me how you managed to get lost for 2 full days in this part of the Andes Mountains."
"I wasn't lost. I spent the weekend at the water springs. They really are something. and thanks to you and your motorcycle, I had a ball. I hesitated a minute before deciding to continue. I also met a nice chick there on Saturday. And I guess you must have guessed by now, I saw some flying saucers. Really? Were you behaving yourself? His response didn't surprise me, nevertheless, I was annoyed. Come on, Richard. I've been straight for over a month. And when I'm traveling, I never carry anything. You know how difficult it is to pass through customs. A man in my position just can't risk these things. It's much too easy to get busted. Yeah, I read you, Charles, but if you're telling me you've been out with flying saucers for the last 2 days, you've got to be high on something. I decided not to pursue the subject any further. Let him believe what he wanted to believe. Richard, I thank you very much for your hospitality. I have a hunch I might be coming back here soon, real soon. Like when? Like maybe next weekend. This girl must be something special. I don't know yet. Chicho, you're welcome to stay here anytime. As you can see, there's plenty of room. Thanks. I guess the CIA must be in good financial shape to keep you guys living so comfortably. You still think I'm with the CIA, huh, my friend? Own up, baby, you don't think I really believe you're here to teach the natives how to work the land and construct homes, do you? Look, let's just say I enjoy working with these people. Okay, forget it. Don't pay any attention to me. I'm just teasing you. Later, after Richard had helped me put my things in the back of the car, I took a sheet of paper and a pen out of my briefcase and made a few notes on some of the things Rama had told me. Even though I kept telling myself there was absolutely no way she could be a creature from another planet, some of her ideas intrigued me. I decided to keep a record of everything she said. I went back to say goodbye to Richard. I asked him if he knew anything about the ice peaks Rama had pointed out to me. I didn't mention the possibility of them being a UFO base. I didn't want to invite any more cynical remarks about my state of mind. He told me that one can't see them from Huancayo and gave me directions to a certain point where I would be able to see the Nevados of Huetaplana. It took only 5 minutes to drive to a place near the Mantaro River where I could get a clear, far-seeing look at them, high against the sky. Again, I was awed by the magnificent sight of those icy peaks glistening and cold against the blue sky. A little past mid-morning, I was on the central highway back to Lima, wondering what I was doing, going back to talk once more with my new acquaintance from outer space. I parked the car as close as I could to the bathhouses. Rama was waiting for me. We greeted, happy to see each other again, and went straight to a bathhouse. She was carrying a newspaper. She laid it down as we began to undress. I noticed it was the Denver Post. Today's copy. I checked my watch. It was only 10:51 a.m. At this moment it was 8:51 a.m. in Denver, Colorado. I didn't know exactly what time this newspaper hits the streets, but it certainly was a little too early for it to be on top of the Andes in South America, about 12,000 miles from Denver. This newspaper couldn't have traveled in a commercial jet to Lima and still another 6 or 7 hours to where we now were standing. I knew the airline timetables. No way could that newspaper have come here that fast. I stared, speechless, at the newspaper. Yes, it's real, Rama said, smiling. I can see that. Don't tell me you got it via satellite. Via Vimana, actually. It took 9.5 terrestrial minutes, with a stopover in Yucatan Peninsula to get that newspaper from Fort Collins, Colorado, USA, to Acapulco, Peru. 9.5 minutes, huh? Weira, a friend of ours, dropped me off here when you were asking directions to Huetaplana Peaks. I didn't even bother to question how she knew when and where I had asked directions. Here we go again, I said. I guess I just have to believe you. Right. I've given some thought to the things you told me yesterday, Rama. and I'm feeling a little generous this morning, so I decided to give you part of my day. I took out my notepad and pen. You don't mind if I take some notes, do you? I'd like to check out some of the things you say.
Well, isn't the junior executive something? She said, laughing.
Part of your day. Not bad. Sure, take all the notes you can. And check them out. That's probably the only way I'm going to get through to you. That will involve talking to a great many people.
I know.
But since your generosity only allows us so much time, we must spend it most wisely. She looked at me closely for a moment before continuing middle dotting.
Charles, listen to me. This time I ask you to be a little more serious. It's not that I lack a sense of humor. As a matter of fact, I enjoy your humor. But there is much ground to cover. Without realizing it, I found I was not really listening to her words. My thoughts were focused on her beauty, her aliveness. I was turned on by her. I was about to say something designed to turn her on when I suddenly remembered her ability to read minds. I tried to bring my concentration back to the subject at hand. But it was too late. She already picked up my vibes. See what I mean? She said, exasperated. How easily you allow yourself to be distracted. Suppose we were in the middle of getting a point across about a complex concept. This gets us away from the subject, we lose our trend of thought. The same thing happens when you make fun of me. The fact is, I'm from another world. You must accept that.
I'm sorry, Rama, I said. I'm not going to put any pressure on you. And I couldn't care less whether you believe me or not. But at least give me the chance to have an intelligent conversation with you, okay, Chucho? I won't play tricks on you. I'm not going to hypnotize you or experiment with you. I want you to be completely conscious, relaxed and aware. I'm not going to drug you, either. The things you're going to hear will be so interesting to you that they will raise even more questions. The more intelligent and challenging your questions are, the more interest I will take in giving you straight answers. I realize I'm talking to an earthling of average intelligence, with little more than basic religious and general education. If there's anything I say that seems too far-fetched for you to believe, make a note of it and, at your own convenience, check it against the scientific, religious or university studies of Y.O.U. choice. Her chastising remarks had an effect. I said, okay, Rama, fair enough. I'll try not to distract you with any more of my smart-ass remarks. And I'll even try to watch what I think since you've more than proven your ability to read my mind. I guess psychic abilities are part of being an extraterrestrial?
No, not exactly, she said.
A lot of people on Earth can also read minds. It's simply a telepathic way of communication using mind waves to tune into other minds around you. The concept is quite simple. You have a radio transmitter and a radio receiver. They both have complicated machinery capable of producing and receiving electrical waves. These vibrations aren't visible, but the machinery can broadcast them either into sounds or images, as in the case of television and radio. You're saying, then, that my mind could broadcast a thought at some frequency, perceptible to you. You sort it out in that beautiful head of yours, and you know what I'm thinking?
Good boy, Charlie.
Yes, something like that, but I'll go into more detail when we talk about the force that keeps things rolling in the universe. Her words conveyed enthusiasm and sincerity, yet it was still difficult for me to say, yes, Rama, I believe you, you're a space traveler. So, instead I said, look, Rama, I'm very impressed by your sincerity, but I've just never met anybody from outer space before. That's why I'm trying to be open to what you're saying. There are certain hang-ups I have that make it difficult for me to cope with this. I enjoy being with you, though. I can see you're still confused, she said, even somewhat afraid. But at the same time, you're too curious to let go, and that makes you willing to give it a try. So, why don't we get out of the water and go somewhere comfortable where we can talk more? Not to the top of that hill again, I groaned. No, on the grass by the river. We got out of the water, collected our things, and walked, naked, to the back of the bathhouse. The sun was beautiful, warming us. By now I was certain that science fiction or science fact. This part of the Andes Mountains was something like the utopia we all dream about. A peaceful, beautiful serenity permeated the whole place. We found a comfortable spot to settle down, then Rama said, "While we're getting to know each other better, I'm going to tell you more about things here on your planet. Once I tell you about these things, it's up to you to form your own conclusions." "What things?" "Lots of things. People, nations, world powers, churches, planets, wars, earthquakes, outer space people, a great international politician, famine, pollution, ecology, the great battle of Armageddon, the prophecies of the Great Pyramid and of the Fatima incident. In a little while, you'll see how all of this clicks into place. The time is right for this to happen. I'm going to answer the age-old question, what's this world coming to? Right now there's a lot of concern for this question. And a great deal of curiosity and interest in the Bible as a means of knowing what lies ahead. But let's take one thing at a time. Yes, take your notes. She settled down comfortably and began. Armageddon is the name given to a great battle destined to end all battles and all wars. You're about to see for yourself, by reading the Bible, among other things, just how all of this will come about. We will also talk about a man, a great political figure who will eventually be the world's king, a dictator, a Führer, an egomaniac who will go so far as to call himself God. He will say he is the Messiah. For our purposes, let's call him the Antichrist, the beast and his false prophets. We'll talk about a nation that is one of the greatest powers on this planet. A nation that in only 2 years is going to be very busy with elections, a new president, and a bicentennial holiday. A society that was founded by a bunch of religious fanatics. The Bible talks about the fall of this kingdom. You'll get a chance to look at some of the most fantastic revelations that the Great Pyramid of Egypt holds for you people on Earth. Within its labyrinths, the whole Adamic era is recorded from beginning to end in allegories. The Bible doesn't mention how the pyramids were built, mainly because no power on Earth could have built them, not even today. You're going to learn about a huge celestial body, about 3,200 times the size of Earth, approaching our solar system. This planet orbits in another solar system and travels parallel to ours. Its volume could cause very serious imbalances to the Earth and neighboring planets. The Bible calls this huge planet Wormwood. A church, fraught with power and riches, plays a very important role in all of these events. A church that speaks on behalf of Jesus, the Christ, but has completely abandoned all of his teachings, and now works for politics and war of the worst kind. The Bible has a name for this church. We're also going to get on the subject of the devil. But not the kind of devils with tail and horns, as you have been taught, Satan and Lucifer. An evil force exists that is not confined to your planet. It's a universal, intelligent, evil vibration. In the Bible, it's called the power given to the beast. And he do great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven and on earth in the sight of men. We're going to talk about a race of people mentioned in the Bible continuously from beginning to end. This race will produce two important figures, both of whom are alive and dwell today. One, who could be called the Antichrist, is a great political person. The other, the promised Messiah, is getting ready for Armageddon. He's going to lead this battle with wrath. This man's name is Jesus Christ. But not the meek, gentle, good-natured man Jesus you've heard about all your life. This time, he comes with all his power and glory. I don't think I have to remind you that the Bible is full of prophecies about this. Or do I? No, you don't, I said, suppressing the incredulity I was feeling, listening to her statements. I showed her the notes I had been taking as she talked. Is that it? She looked at my list and nodded her approval. Then she stared at me. In order to get her to continue, I asked, "Are you sure you're not putting me on? I know that's what you think. But these things I'm saying are nothing new, much less a joke."